From WXXI News in Rochester. I'm Scott Feibusch, in today for Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connections this hour are being made and in some cases broken all over Greater Rochester. If your daily commute includes the eastern part of the Inner Loop, you're in for some big changes as that roadway gets shut down next week. If you ride the bus downtown, you'll soon be arriving at a brand new terminal. And if you're trying to get out of town, and who isn't on this day before Thanksgiving, you'll someday get to ride the train from a brand new station downtown. We've called in the experts to help us understand what's changing all around the city. Our transportation roundtable today on Connections includes Bill Carpenter, the CEO of RTS and RGRTA, Rich Perrin, executive director of the Genesee Transportation Council, Jim McIntosh, the Rochester city engineer who's overseeing the Inner Loop reconstruction, and Mike Governale, president of Reconnect Rochester and creator of the very awesome, if I must say, RochesterSubway.com. We want to hear from you, too. Call in at 844-295-TALK, or you can tweet us at WXXI News. Let's start with the most immediate change that is on its way, and that is the bright, shiny new bus terminal that will be opening its doors very, very early Friday morning, right?
Good morning, Scott. Bill Carpenter here. Yeah. Yes, we'll be opening the doors 4:30 Friday morning. Danielle Cole Gonzalez, our chief operating officer, and I will open the doors, one on each side, and welcome our customers in. We're running the Saturday schedule on Friday, the day after the holiday, and we'll have folks there all day welcoming our customers, ambassadors, to help educate them on how the new system works and how they can get where they need to go reliably for just a dollar a ride, except till the end of the year. Bus people riding the bus from the transit center will board for free.
Well, so a little holiday gift for people wanting to check it out and see what's going on down there. You've had a series of open houses. I was down there for one of the first ones. My kids wanted to see it, and we went down and took a look around. What's the reaction been from people who are walking in there for the first time and seeing it?
The customers and the members of the community that have come in have just been blown away. And one of the concerns I had, it's a beautiful facility, but when our customers got in to take a look around, would they be pleased? And the general overall reaction is we just nailed it. We've got great customer information, we've got electronic signboards, we've got on-site staff, we've got beautiful restroom facilities. The gates that people leave from will be consistent day-to-day, so people will get used to their routine very quickly. And then the facility is just a state-of-the-art, world-class facility. One of the comments is people go through, they say, I don't feel like I'm in Rochester. But I think our transportation customers who use a bus, they've deserved this for a long time, and they'll get it starting Friday, November 28th.
It looks, you know, from having just walked through it during the open house, I mean, it looks almost like an airline terminal
for buses
in some larger city. Yeah, for buses. So it'll be consistent if you're taking, let's say, the number 8 bus going home every day. You'll know that you're always at gate 17 from day to day to get on that bus.
I should have brought
hypothetically
that list,
speaking,
Scott, but yes,
can't obviously.
Once you come in and get used
list,
to that gate, we're going to try to maintain that same gate every time.
We should mention for people who are very accustomed to their bus numbers, especially if, like me, they live over on the eastern side of town, the southeastern side of town, a lot of those bus numbers are changing as part of this, right?
Well, besides the transit center opening, we're using this opportunity to make some other changes to simplify our system. Right now, as you go through town, say a Route 3 bus on the east side, which goes down Goodman and goes over to Lyle out to Unity Hospital. If you're on Goodman headed towards downtown, that placard on the bus is going to say Unity Hospital. And you say, well, that's not where I want to go. I want to go downtown. Well, now that placard, that head sign will say Transit Center, and it will be the Route 33. It won't be the Route 3 all the way through. When it gets downtown, you'll get on a Route 3 if that's what you want to continue to, and that will then say Unity Hospital. When you come back, that will say Route 3 Transit Center. And if you want to continue on to Goodman Street, you would get on a Route 33. We're going to color code our schedules. So the blue schedules are the west side of town and the south side of town. Green schedules will be the east side of town and the north side. And if it's an east side or west side bus that has the same number now, we've tried to maintain some consistency. We've added either 30 or 40 to it. So it's the One Lake, now the 31 Park, used to be the One Park. Mm-hmm. Monroe Avenue, it will be the 7 Monroe and the 47 Clinton. So trying to maintain some similarity, but for a person who comes into town, who starts using us, a longtime resident who starts using us, our current numbering system and routing structure is very complicated to understand. With the transit center, with a place for people to get information, we're going to make it much simpler so people can enjoy their ride.
Exciting. There's new signage coming as well at bus stops, right?
By the spring, we'll have brand new signage, which will be larger. It will be reflective. You'll be able to read it from either side of the sign. It'll have our customer service number right on the sign. And if it's incoming, it will say towards the transit center. If it's outbound, it will say outbound. You know, we take it for granted. I'm a fifth-generation Rochesterian. I can be dropped anywhere in town and know which way downtown is. But, you know, sometimes people walk onto a street and they can't see downtown. They don't know which way to go.
Well, which side of the street do I need to be on? Yeah.
The bus stop signs will now make it easier for people to enjoy their ride.
You know, my route that goes up and down Elmwood by my house is 18 now on one side and 19 on the other. And that's going to get simplified, too. I think I become, the 38 over there, if I'm not mistaken.
You've done your homework, Scott. That's right.
We will come back to you, Bill Carpenter, with more on the bus terminal in a minute. I want to get over here to Jim McIntosh from the city of Rochester because, of course, the other big change that we kind of thought initially was going to have happened either this morning or maybe even last weekend was going to be the closure of the inner loop from Monroe Avenue up to East Main Street and Scio Street. That's been delayed a little bit. What is the very latest right now on when drivers can expect to be closed off there?
Sure, Scott. Thanks for having us on today. This is a great topic to talk about all these changes. But the inner loop, the contractor is out of Alden, New York. And if you've looked at all at the weather we've had the last week or two, they got buried. I think initially they thought that they could get their equipment out and less about the closing, but more about them wanting to close and then actually, you know, start working. And that equipment is what's kind of holding them up. And so they asked for a little more time. We didn't feel anybody was going to complain about the inner loop being open another week. So they're going to start work on Tuesday, the 2nd of December, and they will close that section between Monroe Avenue and Main Street, as you said. And we have a good graphic up on the city website letting people know what entrances and exits are going to be closed and where they can get on. And, you know, they're initially going to be working kind of down in the basin of the inner loop, you know, doing demolition and utility relocation. And I think the first thing people will see sometime over the winter is closing of the Broad Street Bridge and starting that demolition work. Will be the first visible sign up above that people see at the project.
What is the overall time frame? When can people expect to have this grand new boulevard to drive on what's now Union and Pickens Streets?
Well, you know, the company line is November of 2017, but the contractor has indicated that he would like to have 80-90% of this contract done in 2 years instead of the 3 years we have. A lot of utility, you know, conflicts, things out of his control, RG&E, Frontier, you know, Rochester District Heating, a whole bunch of folks have to do some things to make that happen. But I believe that, you know, he's ambitious enough, and I think he will get people to, you know, work with him. And I, you know, and anything he can do to shorten that time frame, we're going to be happy with. We had that opportunity out on Mount Hope to get a great idea from the contractor there, which I think really helped keep those businesses, you know, Brugger's and all the businesses on that side of Mount Hope before Collegetown got here in business, because he really minimized the time that roadway was down by the way he progressed the work.
And what an incredible change has been made over in that part of the city. We can talk about some of that, too. It is Connections here on member-supported public radio. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. We've got the Transportation Roundtable here. We welcome your questions as well at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. If you want to tweet us today, you can tweet us at WXXI News. We'd be happy to answer your questions that way, too. And we should mention, you know, you're talking about, Jim, the inner loop potentially being done ahead of schedule. Bill, the bus terminal was originally supposed to open next spring, right?
Well, Scott, we like to call it the transit center, and it opened 5 months ahead of schedule, came in under budget. And what that allows for us is if there's some things after we open, we find we should have got another monitor here or there that will have some money to do that. I do need to say thanks to the county transportation folks and the city engineering staff. Norman Jones, his whole public works department at the city, and Jim Pond out at the county transportation office. This conversion of traffic on St. Paul and North Clinton from one-way traffic to two-way traffic is a huge benefit for the bus customers. It simplifies the routing for us, which saves time, which means we can have more service out on the streets. We had very tight time frames for that work to get done, and everyone has been all hands on deck as we've done traffic counts. The county engineering for the traffic has taken a look at that and said we can adjust the traffic. We had a curb cut on Main Street I thought would have to wait till the spring, and the folks at the city got that curb cut done so that our buses can have an easier turn from Main Street onto North Clinton. It's just everyone understands the importance of this and how changing the bus customer experience from an outdoor Main Street experience to an indoor comfortable transit center experience allows Main Street to become open for redevelopment again. And very exciting changes for downtown Rochester.
Let's broaden the conversation a little bit, bring in the other side of the table here. Mike Governale from Reconnect Rochester and RochesterSubway.com as well. And Rich Perrin is the executive director of the Genesee Transportation Council. Give us some broad thoughts. I guess I'll start with you, Rich. What should we expect from all of this change? What's the big picture here beyond the transit center and the inner loop? What's the big vision that surrounds all of this right now?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. I think the biggest item that we're trying to address is ensuring that we have a seamless intermodal transportation system, providing people with choices. It's very important that people have a safe, reliable, and efficient system upon which to move wherever they're going for whatever reason. It's not just a luxury, it's a necessity. I think the biggest challenge we're facing is that we've been able to get some incredibly large wins, like the inner loop, like the transit center. But that's not where we see things going long term. And for those that watch 60 Minutes on Sunday, we have a very real and very pressing situation that's needed to be addressed immediately, if not already in the past. And that's something that I think we're looking at going forward and saying, how do we do this? How do we recognize that resources are going to be limited, but our needs are going to grow? And some of the numbers that I like to put out there is that 4 out of 10 bridges in our 9-county region are beyond their design life. They were intended to be out there 50 years. They're older than that now. 1 out of 5 would be eligible for Medicaid if it was a person at 65 years or older. And nearly 20 are older than the first Model T Ford when it rolled off the assembly line. We're out there fighting the good fight, but we're also fighting a battle that's not necessarily going to be easy to win without doing things differently and getting additional resources. And that to us is, I think, our biggest challenge is getting the public to understand what the need is with respect to transportation. I've become very fond of saying that, you know, we can do as much as we can within our limits, but ultimately physics and chemistry always win. And as things age, they're going to have to be replaced, and we've gotten behind on that. So we've got a lot of successes that are out there that we want to celebrate, but it's also important to keep in mind that we need to articulate our needs going forward as well.
Are we in the same kind of danger we saw, for instance, in Minneapolis a few years, that very dramatic collapse of the I-35 W bridge there over the river? Are we in any danger of anything that serious here yet?
No, not at all. If we were at that situation, we wouldn't have been doing our jobs. We're calling attention to it now before it becomes unsafe. I think it's important to note that it's getting there like anything else, but anything else will without the proper attention being paid. But no, if a bridge is unsafe, it's closed. If it's dangerous to the traveling public, it's closed and it's
repaired.
We've
seen that with some weight limits out on the west side on some of those bridges.
Absolutely, yeah. As well as just outright closures. And that's where we really want to start to look too, is right-sizing the system. This provides us a good opportunity to both do what we need to do to maintain our 20th century infrastructure that will serve us in the 21st century, but also look forward to what else we need to do.
I want to talk quickly just about the sort of the dream of the inner loop. I meant to bring in, I just picked up recently a copy of the promotional map that was put out advertising the exciting new one-way street plan for downtown Rochester. I think it was about 1965, and talking about how it was going to simplify the drive through downtown Rochester and make it easier to get through downtown to wherever you were headed in the suburbs. Mike Governale, you're sort of the vision guy. Talk a little bit about how that vision has changed over the years and, you know, whatever the inner loop meant when it was built, what it reflects now.
Yeah, I think we've come a long way, and in the spirit of being thankful, I want to voice my thankfulness for everybody at this table, Jim and Bill and Rich, for steering us in a new direction. As you mentioned, in my blog, RochesterSubway.com, I write a lot about local history, especially infrastructure, the way we've gone from a neighborhood-oriented, very walkable, transit-friendly community. In the early 1900s, we were very densely built. We had a vast streetcar network and five railroad lines that came in and out of Rochester, grand railroad stations and all of this, the Erie Canal. And then the subway that came and connected all of those things. And then 40s, 50s, you know, people became enamored with the automobile and airline travel, and our priorities shifted. Eventually, the railroads declined, passenger use declined. We lost our Bragdon Railroad Station, which we're now rebuilding. So, you know, I think now we're starting to see that maybe we took that a little bit too far. When I step, you know, I work downtown. When I step out onto the streets downtown, I see a lot of voids, a lot of parking lots, which makes it very difficult for us to connect all of the hotspots in our community and make people feel comfortable walking through our community. So I think by refocusing on transit-oriented development and just good walkable development, safer streets for pedestrians, focusing on active transportation, and just realizing that we're just not going to make the investments in automobile infrastructure, as Rich pointed out, that we had in the past. So we have to figure out how to rebalance our transportation network, and I think we're starting to make strides.
Okay. Let's go to the phones here at 844-295-TALK here on Connections. Hal in Sparta, you're with us on Connections with a question about Amtrak, right?
Yes. I've taken three cross-country trips on all connecting from Rochester to via the Lakeshore Limited to Chicago to the Empire Builder to Spokane, from Denver on the line to Chicago, as well as the Southwest Limited. And so I'm in a position, since I got off at many stations, to compare Rochester with these other cities' stations. And even though the station is, I'm guessing, going to be upgraded and somehow combined with a bus station, I haven't seen a current plan of that. So if that was accessible, I'd appreciate it. But what I was particularly concerned about was how accessible the city of Rochester is for people who, let's say, don't have cars, and who actually, as the previous speaker mentioned, how walkable it could be. For example, walking, as I did at least one case, parking at the State Street garage and walking over because I was going to leave the car there for several days. Or in another case, if you just wanted to walk to the High Falls area, to the Genesee Brewery, or to see other sites in the area, it would be really great if this station were more embellished. The size of the current plan for the station concerned me, because the seating was just slightly larger. And in fact, if you combine both the stations, the seating was very crowded on several occasions. These trains are packed full, and just having the whole train, it's so long now, park in the station and not have to have access to only a fraction of the train, having bicycles accessible. Some hotels in cities like Spokane actually have bicycles ready either near the station or at the station, or taking bicycles on or off. I guess there is going to be some improvements in accessibility, so wheelchair folks can have access. But it seems to me it would be great if a tiny fraction of the investment in the Rochester Airport were made into a future renewable powered rail system to replace, as the previous speaker mentioned, the nearly half a dozen rail systems that used to serve Rochester in the last 100 years.
Indeed. Okay.
So I'd like to take comments off the line. Thank you.
A lot of questions there, Hill. I guess let's start with this question. Again, you had mentioned, Rich, you know, we're dealing with limited resources. It'd be great to rebuild the entire Bragdon station just as it existed in 1940. That, you know, we're looking at something a little less aggressive than that, right?
We are, but we're still looking at a major upgrade to an important gateway to the city in terms of people coming either home or coming to visit Rochester. And for a lot of the things that Hal talked about, this is the part about transportation isn't done in isolation. It's about a system, not projects. And so when you look at the new Amtrak station, combined with the things that are being done with respect to walkability that the city has going on and making those connections, active transportation, bike lanes. We're completing a study right now to look at bringing bike sharing to not only Rochester, but the area where it makes sense and in the surrounding suburbs and hopefully, you know, other parts of Monroe County.
Similar to the city bike program in New York.
Absolutely, or Barclays Bike in London. I mean, there's a lot of cities that are doing this. So looking at the whole thing, I think, you know, a lot of the concerns he had as far as the parking, those are going to be taken care of with the reconstruction of the station. But there's also going to be the transit connections, being able to get on an RGRTA bus. And people shouldn't confuse the service that's provided by RTS Monroe or any of the other RTS systems with Greyhound and Trailways. You know, when you have commuters and intra-regional passengers, they have much different needs than inner-city travelers. So it's really important to look at that. But again, as these things come online, we'll work to make those connections. And I think the word I, you know, like to keep using is seamless. A seamless system with a lot of choices. So we'll get there.
And we've seen, I think, just in terms of being able to navigate around downtown, you know, there are all the quadrant signs that went up a couple of years ago pointing people to attractions, like that sort of an informal guerrilla art project that went up last summer with the sign saying, hey, you could walk to the public market in 14 minutes from this corner, or ride your bike in 4 or 5. You know, it certainly was not an official city project, but it kind of enlivened things, I think, too. Bill, for people who are coming into the city who maybe aren't accustomed to coming in by bus, what's going to be waiting for them when they get to the transit center, telling them what's around them that they can go explore and enjoy?
Well, Scott, first, if you're coming by train, we've been working with the development of the train station so that we'll actually have space for a bus. Amtrak customers wanting to catch a train will be able to come to the transit center. We'll have the times posted for when the train arrives. We'll have a bus take folks over to the train station. It's just 4 or 5 blocks, but if they need transportation, we'll do that. And then what's being built is a layover spot for the bus to wait at the Amtrak station, so those coming off the train would be able to get over to the transit center and to their destinations. And what they'll find when they arrive at the transit center is a whole board of the activities going on in the community. The goal is for the Visitor and Convention Bureau to have the same kind of information available at the transit center that you see at the airport for the airplane customers.
Fantastic. You are listening to Connections on member-supported public radio. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with our Transportation Roundtable and more of your questions as well.
Coming up in our second hour, we look at the growth in the knowledge industry, a look at the Rochester Brainery. What's it modeled after? What kind of classes?
I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson. Coming up in our second hour on Connections, a conversation with author Cheryl Strayed. Her memoir, Wild, recounted the journey she took up the Pacific Crest Trail after her divorce and her mother's death. It's now become a Hollywood movie that's being released next week. We'll hear from Cheryl Strayed coming up on Connections.
Three, two, one.
Thanksgiving is about rituals. We asked you about yours.
Some hay meat and can eat.
And we're together. That's what matters.
While everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree.
Moments of holiday grace later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That'll be this afternoon at 4 on your NPR News station.
And welcome back to Connections on member-supported public radio. I'm Scott Feibusch. Evan Dawson has a well-deserved day off on this day before Thanksgiving. If you are out there traveling today, it is one of the busiest travel days of the year. We are talking transportation this hour, a new transit center about to open in downtown Rochester, the Inner Loop just days away from closing, part of it, and much more. In studio with me, it's our Transportation Roundtable. Bill Carpenter is the CEO of RGRTA and RTS. We have Jim McIntosh, the Rochester City Engineer, who's overseeing the Inner Loop reconstruction and much more beyond that. Mike Governale is the president of Reconnect Rochester and creator of RochesterSubway.com. And Rich Perrin is the executive director of the Genesee Transportation Council. And these guys are all trying to pull all these pieces together and make it a much more pleasant experience to get around town. Paul, in the city, you've got a question about congestion on the roads as you're getting around, right?
Yes. This is a very important congestion question. If you stand on the corner of Court Street and Clinton Avenue, look to your left of the traffic coming over the bridge from the, I guess, expressway. Those two lanes of traffic literally speed their way through past Court Street, past Broad Street, to the Windstream building, and all of a sudden, the left lane has to merge to the right. I've actually stood there and watched. It is very, very scary, very dangerous. I'm not sure what they got in store for that. Right now, they got that major, major big sign up here. But when they take that down, that is an accident waiting to happen, as I said, because they are speeding. Now, if they can slow the traffic down from the time they get on that bridge, let's say down to 20 to Clinton Avenue, I mean, to Main Street, they may succeed. But if they don't do something, there's going to be a few accidents there now as they try to merge to the right there.
All right. Thanks for the question. I'm going to throw that one right over to Jim, because that's part of this whole project to convert these one-way streets that kind of became speedways through downtown into more civilized city streets, right?
Yes, and we and Jim Pond, transportation, you know, person who manages all the signals for the county. A lot of people don't know that they manage, the county manages all the signals in the city. But we have seen that, you know, issue. We've actually have made some striping changes out there to help address it. But the big thing that's going to help that is after tomorrow, when the buses are now going to the transit center, as opposed to stopping in that right lane right along the Windstream building, you will see people getting over that way. Right now, they look up the street, they see some buses stop, they don't know if they're going to move, not move, so they're hesitant to get into that lane. And then I think the bigger thing within the next 6 to 8 months is going to happen is that whole two-way conversion is going to be moved up the street to Broad Street. And that section of Clinton between Main Street and Broad Street is going to go to two-way. That project will be let over the wintertime, and the construction will start in the spring. And moving that back a little bit, we'll be able to do a better job of lining folks up as they come off the expressway and get them into the right lanes as they move through that a section, because it's a pretty strong left-hand turn moving on Broad Street, so those cars are going to be lining up there, and the folks wanting to go straight through will be in the right two lanes. And so by summer of next year, that's going to go away. But in the meantime, we noticed some issues there, and we've made some changes and put some new striping in there to try and guide cars into the two lanes they need to be in.
I'm still getting used to the idea that I can actually make these turns onto Main Street that, you know, ever since I was a child, I remember that project when they made Main Street not quite all pedestrian, but really tried to discourage cars from being on there and limited a lot of those turns. What's the vision here? Where, you know, once we get some of these pieces in place with the two-way streets, with the interloop closure, and especially now with getting the buses over to the transit center, what's that next piece then? What's the vision for what Main Street becomes when it's no longer just the place where the buses are stopping and letting people on and off?
Well, you know, fortunately, through the good work of GTC and the folks at the city and kind of everybody's, you know, thought process, a couple of things came together. One of them was a pedestrian level wayfinding to kind of match up with that wayfinding that you spoke about earlier. And that is, you know, set. Our planning and zoning, you know, department put that together, and it's kind of ready to go. And then it's, you know, how do we find the funds to implement it? And then along that same time comes this grant from the Transportation Alternatives Program through GTC. We made an application that got highly rated in the region. We were able to get it funded. And so within the next year to 2 years, we'll be planning and implementing both that pedestrian wayfinding sign and putting some parking back onto Main Street. And that's, you know, we're really excited about that project, which will extend from pretty much the Liberty Pole down to the river and start to make those connections and kind of, you know, get to some of the things that Mike is talking about as far as, you know, pedestrian wayfinding. You get, you know, downtown, it's going to, you know, the same way the big signs do for cars as you come into the city. And as you, you know, reflected on those, what you'd call the gorilla signs, you know, from the TEDx folks a year or so ago, you know, something, you know, more formal like that to tell people, you know, this way to, you know, this event and to, you know, wherever they're, the hot spots, as Mike refers to, we're going to get those, you know, in more formalized and help people move around the city, you know, by, you know, those will help both cyclists and people walking, and you know they aren't intended for motorists. They have the larger signs and Garmins and everything else to help mm-hmm. them get there.
Mike, yeah, I just want to commend that last caller for pointing out areas of concern for pedestrians. My organization, Reconnect Rochester, is primarily concerned with public transportation and expanding our public transit facilities, whether it be bus or rail or what have you. But a big part of using public transit is walking and being able to get from your bus stop to your job or wherever you're going on foot safely. And so we've set up committees to focus on the bus system, our rail system, and also pedestrian safety, because we think that's important. And we want to give citizens an outlet and a channel to voice those concerns. What I've found over my past 4 years of advocacy is that our public leaders are, everybody at this table, people working on town level and city level, are very receptive to public input. And maybe it's because Rochester is sort of a big small town that, you know, people listen to each other and you can get your voice heard. But that's been very helpful for us. So I would ask for more people, especially pedestrians, cyclists, public transit users, to make their concerns heard, point out those trouble spots. The city's done a great job with traffic calming efforts over the past couple of years. We've had some projects that have been shot down by people who maybe, their primary mode of transportation is automobile and they see the world through that lens. So it's really important that, if you walk, which we all do, that you voice your concerns and make those points known.
And I'll admit, as somebody who tends to get back and forth working weird hours here, by car, I had the whole one-way street thing really down to a science. I knew exactly which lights to hit when, and I could zip out of downtown in no time flat, and I guess that's the price you pay for moving things towards a city that's more comfortable for everybody, right?
Absolutely, and I just want to say, I drive. You know, it's not a zero-sum game. So as I talk about public transit and pedestrian friendliness, I want to be able to move through our region as quickly but as safely as possible as well, whether I'm behind the wheel or on foot. I want everybody to be safe.
And having been spending some time lately down in New York City, I can tell you we can still get around a lot faster here than a lot of other parts of the country. It is Connections. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson with our Transportation Roundtable this hour. You can join us, too, at 844-295-TALK. You can tweet us at WXXI News. We have a bus question here from Russell in the city. Hi, Russell.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I believe in public transportation very much, and I'm eager to see the new transit center. I want to just quickly describe my own situation, hoping it might resonate with some of the other listeners. I live in Penfield, and I used to take the 22 bus every day until the change was made a few years ago to the across-the-board $1 fares. And one way of paying for that seemed to be to cut the schedules back to the point that I couldn't get home in the evening anymore. Nothing ran between 6 and 10:30, and the Sunday schedule was completely cut. I did go to a public meeting and speak with Mr. Carpenter about that. I'm just wondering, now that this terminal project is completed, does it mean there might be funds available to restore some of the cuts in that service? Because it doesn't matter how cheap the buses are, if they don't run when people need them, then it's not helpful. And I can't even say I have five friends who would ride with me at those hours unless I knew there was some possibility of restoring some of these schedules.
Hey, Russell, good to talk to you again. I appreciate your comments. One of the struggles at public transit agencies like RTS across the country, I talk to my peers, how are you handling this? The question is frequency versus coverage. So to have a destination like Penfield, which is a pretty good distance, I live in Penfield. When I take that bus, there's a very faithful 5, 10, 12 people on the bus. That bus service costs the same whether it's carrying 40 people or a dozen people. And as state funding and federal funding has been constrained, we're left with making the choice between making it infrequent throughout the community so that we get the coverage people want, or reduce coverage so that you can maintain frequency and that it can be a lifestyle choice to take the bus. And that is a conversation. When I talk to my elected officials, I say, please do long-term funding decisions, because then I can make a decision for Russell, either say to you, the money's not there to continue routes to where you live, or I can, over the next 3 to 4 years, see that the funding will be in place to continue it. And right now, at the federal level, the transportation bill is extended from September till May without the appetite to do a long-term bill. In New York State, where we get 40% of our funding, it's an annual decision. The last 6 years, our funding has essentially been flat. We're up 3% from where we were 6 years ago. And I will tell you, our costs are higher today than they were 6 years ago. So we are constantly making those changes or making those decisions based on coverage versus frequency. And those are, as Mike Governale said a little bit earlier, we need to hear from the community on what you'd like us to do so that we can be responsive to the community we serve.
All right, thanks.
Well, thank you for your advocacy for all the riders in Rochester.
Thank you, Russell.
Thanks for the call, Russell. That dollar fare, I mean, that's, you know, I know as I travel around, there are not a lot of transit systems that let you ride anywhere, much less, you know, as far as you do for a dollar. I guess mile by mile, maybe going from Manhattan out to Coney Island for $2.50 is probably works out about the same. But there are not a lot of systems out there that are doing that. How long can you hold the line on that?
Well, Scott, the magic to what we do, most places, about 20% of their funding comes from the fare. For us, we've done a great job partnering with different businesses and other institutions in the community so that the dollar fare does represent about 20% of our revenue, but partnerships that we have, whether it's with a nursing home that needs to extend the service further to get their workers to that destination. Certainly, we've got partners like RIT and others, but we get another 20% of our funding. We actually get more money from partners than we do from the dollar fare. And as long as that can continue to grow in cooperation with the dollar fare, we can continue to expand our network. When that model doesn't work anymore, then we'll go back to looking at the fare revenue. But there isn't anyone else in the country at a dollar fare. In using it, the $3 all-day pass is another great value, and we find that we're really benchmarking against everyone else in the country. We lead that effort in making it affordable for people to use a bus.
And we should mention that if you are checking out the new transit center after it opens on Friday morning, that through December, right?
Through December 31st.
You'll be able to get on a bus once you've paid to get over there. Once you've walked over there, you'll be able to get on a bus there for free. December, which is pretty cool. I know I'm going to be checking that out. I'm looking forward to it. Back to your calls, Maggie, in the city. You've got a train question.
Yeah, I think there's big problems with train travel. I listened to the other gentleman talk about his experiences. He travels a lot by train. He says the trains are full, but I can just give you two experiences that have happened in the last year. I took a train from Utica to Rochester in September. It's supposed to be about a two-hour trip. It took 3 hours and 15 minutes. We had to pull over for freight trains to go by. Then the train just died someplace between Syracuse and Rochester. It took them 20 minutes to get that going. And my daughter and my little granddaughter travel from Chicago to Rochester by train. And they've done it three times, but they won't do it again. They'll come by plane next time because leaving Chicago about 5 weeks ago, they were supposed to leave at 10 p.m. The train didn't leave till 2 a.m., and it's supposed to be about a 12-hour trip. They didn't get in until 7 p.m., and it was supposed to arrive about 10 a.m. in Rochester, I think. Going home, back to Chicago, same thing. And my daughter said they keep pulling over to let freight trains pass. And she was very concerned because all these tank cars full of oil, I guess, were passing them very close, and she just felt it wasn't safe. So, you know, our two experiences with the train recently have been very bad. Going home, it took her more than 12 hours, way more than 12 hours to get home, more like 18 hours. Mm-hmm. When traveling with a little kid, just imagine.
I can tell you, I've had that experience. They don't call it the Late Shore Limited sometimes for nothing on that on that route. Thanks for the call, Meg. I guess the issue there, and in big part with that route, is that Amtrak doesn't own those rails, right?
No, and that's the case most places throughout the country. There's very few intercity passenger train tracks that are owned by the actual intercity passenger train operators. And I think Maggie's point is a good one. It calls for why we need a more robust federal program in particular to be able to bring the things that people are asking for, provide those options and choices. But it's very difficult when we're weight posting and closing bridges to say that we're going to continue to expand the system when we're having a difficult time maintaining what we do. She also brought up a very important point, and it doesn't come up often, but you know, we have this expectation here in Rochester that, you know, in a couple months from now, when snow is blanketing the ground and we go to Wegmans, we're going to be able to get six different types of pears. And when we go to the Pottery Barn, we're going to have 12 different colors of the bowl we want. And all of that stuff has to move here, that stuff. And that freight is the equivalent of about 300 million tons per year, worth almost $1 trillion, that are moving into, out of, through, and across the region. So we also have a responsibility there if we want to have an economy that supports good-paying jobs. We're still, you know, of the large regions in New York State, the most dependent on manufacturing, which has a huge multiplier effect. We also, you know, seem to sometimes forget that we have eight counties outside of Monroe where agriculture and related agribusiness are the number one industry. All of these things are dependent on, again, a safe, efficient, reliable transportation system, not for commuting to and from work or a doctor's appointment, but for getting those goods and those products, both as raw products and intermediate inputs to finished products, out to market and into the places we go and buy them and keep people employed. So it's a very tricky balance. I mean, we were just talking about the passenger side of things. Now you throw in freight, and we've got a lot to do. But no, I think there's been some pretty good momentum on saying, you know, if we can really have a true open conversation about this, what are the elements that we want to include in it? And passenger rail has been a big one for a lot of people. So we are listening.
Indeed. And that's a good point, too, about the oil, whether or not we get fracking here. That oil is on the move, and it's taking up a lot of space on the rails. We've got time for a few more quick questions here before we get to the end of the hour. Scott in Fairport, you've been very patient. You're wondering about the contractor choice for the Interloop?
Yeah, I was just curious how the selection was for the contractor and why someone from Rochester was not selected. I'm sure it's based on the bid, probably. And the other thing was, what are they going to fill it with? Is this going to be dredging from the Genesee River? And who are the tenants going to be that you are anticipating?
All right, good questions, John.
Okay, well, I can answer all of them and direct you who can answer the last one. But as far as you're right, the contract was a bid contract, so we are by municipal law, we need to go with a low bidder. There was another bidder based in Rochester who was, the second low bidder, but the low bidder was from Buffalo. They have done work here before. They actually did the Jefferson Road project that DOT did a couple years ago, and so DOT has worked with them before, and we're confident that they will do a good job. And for the most part, they will use local labor. It's a union contract, and the contractor, has shown in the past that he's used, local union labor. So I think, wherever he is from, that work will, still go to a lot of local folks. As far as the fill, he's required under the contract to meet a certain, type of fill. We're pretty confident about this spec. We used it, a very similar spec in the Broad Street tunnel fill that we did, which was actually even a little bit more as far as volume. And that project's held up very well over the 3 years it's been in. Really had no areas where we had settlement or anything. And a lot of that's about how slow you bring it up and compact it. So we're confident there. As far as the development piece, that's really in our neighborhood and business development, but they're working on a plan to try and bring to life what we saw in the economic study, which said a mix retail and housing along that corridor, and it looked at some densities, and you can see that on the website on that video that is out there. That's really kind of their Ballywick, and I think in a month or so, those requests for proposals will be coming out.
All right, as long as we are on the inner loop. Another Scott. Scott in Greece, you got a question about one of the intersections there?
Yeah, I was wondering about looking at the north end of the project, the possibility of a future restoration of University Avenue and even filling the inner loop a little further back to Sio Street. Had that been considered, or is that something that, you know, you could see in the future?
Good question.
Sure, great question. And, you know, if the mayor had her way, that would have been part of this project. And Assemblyman Gant, they, you know, really saw the benefit of that. And, you know, we did too. In fact, we studied it. And because I think it's very hard to project how the traffic patterns are going to change once the interloop comes, we could not get to a place where we and DOT, you know, it's a federally owned, you know, project. We're going to take ownership, but get them to agree that we could take that Main Street, you know, piece out of there and reconnect University, which, you know, for us and for all the, you know, urban mobility and all those, you know, pedestrian, you know, pieces that Mike talked about, you know, we'd really like to do. So what we've agreed to do is start looking at that now and start to, you know, get the, you know, the traffic and the other analysis done as people change their traffic patterns, both through this project and once the project is done. We didn't want to put something in there where we had that University connection but had a triple left there so that it did look like, you know, East Henrietta and, yeah, and Jefferson Road. You know, that's not an urban kind of thing to do either, and so that's where we're moving on that one.
Indeed. A couple more quick calls here as we get towards the end of our hour. Tim in Pittsburgh, you got a question about St. Paul Street?
I do. First off, I love the fact that all those streets are two-way now. I think it's great. Brings more people down there, and it's much easier to travel. The only question I had was, if you're heading south on St. Paul now and you're taking a left onto Main Street, that intersection, there's no green arrow there at the left-hand turn. It's just a constant green, you know, just constant traffic. And you're only getting one car through there on the left-hand turns because of the traffic now going north. And almost every time, that car is basically turning left on red and hoping that no one from the opposite direction heading north is now plowing through that red light. Is there any chance that they're maybe just simply put an arrowed light in there?
Yes, that is, you know, we had looked at that. And again, you know, Monroe County has been looking at it. They actually have some cameras out there, and they've been watching that. And I think if we see that as really an issue, you know, we can start, you know, to look at that. We know that this whole change in traffic patterns is, you know, is something you can predict what's going to happen. But once you open up the streets of two-way, you know, people are going to find different ways to get around the city. And so that's definitely something we'll be looking at. You know, are there opportunities to, you know, put it, as you said, an advanced, you know, arrow or something like that, you know, on that street. But yeah, it's not set in stone as to what we're going to do there. We are going to start keep watching it, and if some change needs to be made, we will do that as we, you know, look forward to taking, you know, the two-way conversion to the south.
Well, the intricate mechanics of making a city work. I could talk about this stuff for hours. Unfortunately, down to the last couple of minutes. And our last question, Beth in Brighton, you got a question about the bridge over the Genesee River?
Yeah. I worked at downtown in the Four Corners for more than 25 years. And walking across from Four Corners up to Midtown is absolutely unbelievable, crossing the Genesee. I also spent some time in Denver, and they put up a cover in Denver in the wintertime, and it's absolutely amazing how much traffic will come, you know, foot traffic, bicycle traffic. So I would suggest to whoever is in charge of all this to take a look at what Denver does in the wintertime and put a covering over the Genesee River from Four Corners up to Midtown to make people more engaged and more wanting to walk up and down in that area. It is absolutely freezing in the winter, and it's miserable.
Put some buildings back along the edges of Main Street on the bridge there, too, while we're at it.
Oh. Yeah,
interesting.
I mean,
question.
I don't care.
Let me give these guys a minute or two to respond before we get to the end of the show, Beth. Is this there are a lot of big ideas out there. How do you combine the big ideas with the practicalities of what can and can't actually be done?
Yeah, well, I think the city is working on a master plan, Center City master plan project right now. So now's the perfect time to bring these ideas out. Our group, Reconnect Rochester, has been working on an idea to repurpose the Main Street bus shelters that are there now and maybe put businesses and information booths in there to add sort of points of attraction along Main Street to bring people out and bring more pedestrians out. So these ideas are all great. And like I said, you know, if you have ideas that you need to communicate to the right people in power, go through Reconnect Rochester, reconnectrochester.org. We can direct you to either Jim or Rich or whoever the right person might be.
All right, we are getting very close to the end of the hour here. Very quickly, we got the Interloop closing December 2nd now, right, Jim?
Correct.
Transit Center opens Friday. I'll be there all morning.
All right. Free rides from the Transit Center going outbound until December
1st. Walk in, get it dropped off, take a look around, be amazed, and then take the bus home.
It is pretty neat. My thanks to our Transportation Roundtable. Joining us today, Bill Carpenter, the CEO of RTS and RGRTA. Rich Perrin, the Executive Director of the Genesee Transportation Council. Jim McIntosh, the Rochester City Engineer. And Mike Governale from Reconnect Rochester. And we can't miss a plug in there for RochesterSubway.com because it's just cool.
Thank you.
Fun stuff about city history. I'm Scott Feibusch. John Andrus is behind the boards. Ariel Feibusch has been assisting me today in her day off from school as well. Another hour of Connections is coming your way from member-supported public radio.